Good evening, everybody. My name is Suze Appel. I'm one of the Sims local Dharma leaders. I'm one of the leaders of the Sunday morning sit, and I also participate in the Buddhist Essentials. What we do on Monday nights is we have a 45-minute quiet sit, and then because it's the first Monday of the month, we're going to spend a little bit of time with the picture for this month. We've been dealing with the Zen stories and pictures called the ox herding pictures, and it's a story about our practice and the path. And this being November, we're in the last picture of the series. So what we're going to do this twice. I'd like you to just reestablish your relaxed posture, your kind of meditative place. And when you open your eyes, taking a look at this picture of entering the marketplace with extended hands, I'm going to read the commentary and give some instructions for this first time. We're going to be trying to just look and listen, kind of just take in the spirit of the words and the pictures, noticing what responses are evoked in you, trying to let go of any kind of assumptions about, oh, I know what this means, I read something about it before. But really take a moment to let the image and the words find their place in you. Entering the marketplace with extended hands, barefoot and naked of breast, I mingle with the people of the world. My clothes are ragged and dust-laden, and I am ever blissful. I use no magic to extend my life. Now before me, the dead trees become alive. As you hear those words and look at the picture, what word or phrase or detail in the image really strikes you, really draws your attention? No need to analyze that or elaborate on it. Just notice what comes up first for you. And spend a couple moments just allowing yourself to engage with that word or phrase or the image. And a second time, looking at the picture again, you'll hear me reading the words. And this time, I'm going to be asking you, is there something in this picture or the words that invite you to feel a certain way, either an emotion or a physical sensation? Or is there something in these words or the images in the picture that invite you to think a certain way? Again, reading the commentary. Barefoot and naked of breast, I mingle with the people of the world. My clothes are ragged and dust-laden, and I am ever blissful. I use no magic to extend my life. Now before me, the dead trees become alive. We'll have time after I give my talk to share some of your own reflections. If you have a pen and paper nearby, you might want to jot it down or just feel like you'll remember. So the two prompts are, what word or phrase or part of the detail in the image that really strikes you, really draws you in? And is there anything in this picture or the words that invite you to feel a certain way or to think a certain way? So Philip Kaplow wrote this book called The Three Pillars of Zen. And in it, he said that the original ox herding series ended at number 8. Remember the one with the big circle. He says that they added number 9 and 10 beyond Enzo to make it clear that the Zen person of the highest spiritual development, oops, just like Tim is always futzing with this and I know why now, that the Zen person of the highest spiritual development lives in the mundane world of form and diversity and mingles with the utmost freedom among ordinary people, inspiring them with his or her compassion and radiance to walk in the way of the Buddha. Inspiring them with his or her compassion and radiance to walk in the way of the Buddha. That's kind of a high bar. But I really like these words, both for the guidance that's in there and the inspiration contained within. You know, for inspiration, we have this question. So as we contemplate integrating our practice and re-entering the marketplace, are we ready to inspire people with our compassion and our radiance? So radiance, it's not a word that I use very often, so I had to look up the definition. It says that someone who is radiant is so happy that their happiness shows in their face, a glowing, a warmth, joyful. And it made me think about how we can connect with our own sense of radiance, connect with our own joy that comes from the practice. So amazing. We have all these great technologies and then we got this funky little thing that doesn't want to live on one's ear. So we connect with the joy that comes from the practice and connect with the gratitude that we find in our practice and on this path. I know that even in times of real difficulty in the practice for me, there still is an underlying appreciation that I'm seeing and experiencing fully the difficulty. I'm not pushing it away or running away from it. I went on retreat in the fall with Tim and Narayan at Cloud Mountain, and it was a really challenging retreat for me. And yet, I guess it was a combination of how many years I've been practicing and the guidance of the teachers. I really stayed with the challenges. I investigated them. I felt the ouch and the ickiness of it all. And at times I even kind of caught a little glimpse of the cause. And in the end, I said, you know, this was a really good retreat because I was paying attention to what had arisen inside of me and in my life and what was going on and how I was responding to it all. And one of the teachers, in this case, it was Narayan, in my interview, she urged me to connect with my Dharma zeal. I don't think I had ever heard those two words put together before. And as I reflected on that, I realized that a good part of my Dharma zeal is this deep gratitude, you know, for Sims, for Tim and Tiwari, for Rodney, for the Sangha. Certainly for the opportunity to be a local Dharma leader. And the more I reflected on my Dharma zeal, the more I connected to the joy of the practice. So Kaplow says that, you know, we're inspiring people. But in addition to this inspiration, there's also kind of a direction. We are invited to mingle. Just to mingle in the marketplace. I like that word too. So we're not told to lead, to organize, to educate, to tell others what to do, to advise, just mingle. So mingle, it's kind of like moving around freely, associating with others. You kind of bring things together, but everything keeps its basic fundamental identity. It doesn't lose that. Mingling is kind of just staying open to what happens, how things evolve. You just kind of mix together. You don't really know what, what the new thing's going to be. So here we are at that last picture of the series. And we know from all these months of the teachings of with Tim and Tiweri and on Sunday with and on Thursday nights that these 10 pictures are not linear. In fact, a couple Sundays ago, one of the yogis in my breakout group said, I just love this. He said, in any given situation, I could be right back in picture number one, totally lost, confused, not sure which way to go. And I think we've all found that as we've been exploring this, that there are times when, oh yeah, maybe we're up on the mountaintop or in our little hut. But then there's times when we are struggling with that whip and that rope, or we're just back getting a little glimpse of things. And so here we are with picture 10. And it's the same kind of thing. You know, it says that now we're entering the marketplace, but it's not as if this is the first time we've entered the marketplace. I mean, anyone, if you live with others, you enter the marketplace every time you go in the kitchen. You know, if you work with others, you enter the marketplace every time you collaborate with someone, you pick up your shift, you go to a meeting. If you're a parent, you're in the marketplace all the time. And every time we start a new relationship, we're right there in the middle of the marketplace. But I think this picture is a little different in that we are now at this point in our practice where we've aged and evolved and grown. And remember, you know, that yesterday when Linda was giving her talk, she reminded us at how different the ox herder looks now in picture 10. Remember the early pictures when he was just this little guy and real slim and had a whole bunch of hair. And now there's this older guy and he's bald and a bit paunchy in the gut. And just like the ox herder, we've changed. I mean, not just only physically, maybe paunchy in the gut, but also in our inner world. So as we're entering the marketplace now, it's a little different than what we've been doing all the way along. And so we're really integrating our practice with our lives. So tonight I want to share some of my thoughts on what do we need as we really go and mingle in the marketplace and inspire others with our compassion and our radiance. I think there are four things that we need to do. The first is we need to pay really close attention to the quality of our mind and heart. Remembering the four foundations of mindfulness, and the third foundation is what is the state of the mind. And you know, the marketplace can be a crazy place. It can smell bad. It can be noisy. It can be filled with all kinds of difficult people and situations. Tomorrow's the election. I mean, talk about a crazy marketplace. This is where we're finding ourselves. So it can be hard to enter the marketplace. And I think we really need to have a clear idea of what our mind state is before we enter. You know if we're really ready. And if we're ready to be in the marketplace, bringing the kind of qualities with us that we really aspire to embody. If we're at ease and we feel like, boy, I'm standing on some solid ground of my practice, you know, I feel really calm and steady, then moving forward, it's not so bad to try to mingle. You know, we know that we're coming from kind of a wholesome place and we can be confident in the practice and humbled by the truth of what we know and what we don't know. Every time you're going to re-enter, I think it's important to check with the state of mind, because you can make then an appropriate decision of whether you enter or maybe you need to go back to the mountaintop, back to your retreat, to recollect, to resettle, to reground. You know, if you're filled with confusion, if you're agitated, angry, or troubled, it might be time to ask, well, what does this mind, this heart really need right now? Is it time maybe to retreat into solitude and wait for a time when the quality of mind and heart and body are a little better suited to mingling. I know in our Sangha, there are a lot of introverts. And some of you may think that it's never really a good time to mingle because you really like, you like your quiet, you like your kind of just a few people at any one time. And, you know, even for those of us who are more extroverted, it still can be really challenging to go back into the marketplace. We all need to take care of ourselves and know what our boundaries are and what our comfort level is. Be cautious about not getting too stuck or comfortable with our comfort level so that we're also willing to branch out. I think at my very first retreat, when I was first introduced to the Dharma, Stephen Levine said, we do not practice for ourselves alone. So that has stuck with me. I mean, and it's the truth that we practice not just for ourselves, but so that as we free ourselves with greed, hate, from greed, hatred, and delusion, we create opportunities for others to do the same. But we really need to know ourselves and know how we can mingle, how we can be at ease with connections with others. And sometimes you just can't avoid the marketplace, whether you want to or not. You know, you might check in with your mind and it says, oh, yeah, I really need to go to my room. But you have a meeting that you have to go to. It's your shift at work and you need to show up. Your children or your partner need you. You need to take care of things in life. So what do you do when you've checked in and this with your state and it says state and you stay in your room, but that's not really an option? I think this is even more important to ask yourself over and over again, what does this mind and heart need right now? There are times when, you know, I don't work with other people now, but I worked for the city of Seattle many years ago. And so I was always in staff meetings. And there were times when I was just ornery, just out of sorts. And I wish I had had a practice back then, because I think what my mind was telling me what it needed was to be quiet, to not be the one who is always talking, always contributing. But you'll know when you ask yourself, what does the mind and heart need right now? And listen to that answer. So in addition to asking ourselves, what's the state of mind? I think the second thing that we need is to understand and embody the truth of interconnectedness. All through this year, Sunday teachers, we've been offering and quoting Martine Batchelor. She's this amazing woman who teaches in France and had a really good article. I think it was in Tricycle. She says this about this picture. The practice doesn't stop at emptiness. If we attach ourselves to emptiness, it could lead to separation and isolation. So we go one stage further. Re-entering the world, we're having forgotten ourselves. We are enlightened by all things. We realize the interdependence, which is at the root of all life. We realize the interdependence, which is at the root of all life. There are so many ways that we integrate this truth into our lives. You know, in nature, if you're a gardener, you see how the pollinators make it possible for the plants to grow. And if you hike, you see how the trees kind of communicate with each other and fuse each other. You know, there's no such thing as a lone aspen. They all, their root systems all form an enormous fused root. Redwoods that are really, really tall have a little shallow root system. And so they grow in thick groves so that their shallow roots intertwine. You know, and there's so many ways that we know that we're connected. Here's what this Ojibwe author, Richard Wagami, says about breath and relationship. He says, from our very first breath, we are in relationship. With that indrawn draft of air, we become joined to everything that ever was is, and ever will be. When we exhale, we forge that relationship by virtue of the act of living. Our breath commingles with all breath, and we are a part of everything. Thich Nhat Hanh had many wise essays on interconnectedness. He coined the phrase interbeing, where he combines the prefix inter with the verb to be and creates this new verb called interbe. But when we enter this noisy, smelly, often difficult marketplace, our understanding of interconnectedness has to be something more than just conceptual. Each of us probably has some strategies for it, for how we do that. You know, I think we've probably heard this suggestion that if you're dealing with a real difficult person, you might visualize what that person might look like when they were 3 or 4 years old. They were kind of cute and mischievous and maybe scared, and it kind of connects you in a different way, and you can identify with that. Or you might ask yourself, well, maybe this person's mind state is really troubled and frightened and agitated and restless. And since we know what that feels like inside of us, we might be able to feel a little more connected. And then, you know, there's no way of denying the interconnection just in these last 3 years and the spread of the coronavirus. Those of us who've been part of SIMS for many years might remember a wonderful series that our founding teacher, Rodney Smith, gave some years ago on the shadow. He pointed out how inside each of us is a shadow side where the remains of greed, hatred, and delusion still live, and where they crop up in ways that we wouldn't necessarily want them to, but there they are. And sometimes we have to spend a bit more time to see our shadow, to be really honest about where those poisons live. One way we can see it is when we hold on to beliefs of what's right and wrong and hold on so tightly, there's such an element of greed in that holding. And then when we hold on to our beliefs and that if you don't agree with me, you're wrong and bad, there's so much aversion and ill will with that reaction. So sometimes if we can just hold ourselves a little more lightly and kindly, and we see how much greed, hatred, and hatred remain in us, as we see that, it may result in some greater compassion and understanding for others. I know that when I'm filled with ill will, it feels really awful inside. So when I experience that ill will from others, perhaps I can understand that that person is hurting in the same kind of way. Our community statement, which I read at the beginning, says that we welcome people just as they are. And it's a really good challenge for us to bring that sense of welcome when we enter the marketplace. And when we're at SIMS, how we welcome people just as they are. I have a little mantra that I've used for years, and I'll just insert some names, where I'll say, let Janet be Janet. Let Philip be Philip. Sometimes I'll go, just let Suze be Suze. It's not so much accepting or celebrating how another person behaves, but it's just reminding me that this person is who they are, and I'm not going to make them into somebody different. And that's who I'm engaging with. That's the reality of the moment, that when I let Janet be Janet, then I say, oh, I'm relating. I'm mingling with this Janet, not with some image of who I hope she would be, but this actual person. And it also kind of lets me off the hook. I don't have to change them, not that I could anyway. So first, I've said that I think we need to know our state of mind. Secondly, really understand and take with us the truth of interconnectedness. And the third is something I'm going to go back to that I talked about right at the beginning, that line from the the commentary that says, I am ever blissful. Where is our joy? I think it's important to revisit this when I was talking about it in terms of radiance, because I think joy is really tied to our sense of confidence and faith in the practice. You know, if we're going to be inspiring people with our compassion and radiance, I think that comes from having a really fully embodied experience of joy. Joy is the fourth factor in the seven factors of awakening. And some teachers call it joy in the practice or delight in the practice. I like what the teacher from California, Gil Fronsdale, says. He defines this joy as joy because we're engaged. We're fully engaged in life, bringing mindfulness, investigation, energy into the practice, all of which really lead to joy. We've recommitted, you know, here we are. We've been spending this whole year, and for many of us, we've been spending a couple decades on this. So here we are at this 10th picture, which really says, okay, recommit to be fully engaged. You're going to come into the marketplace with, it doesn't say eyes wide open, but I think the eyes are wide open and the hands are open. And we bring with us everything we've learned from the practice, the Four Noble Truths, the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, the Paramis, the aggregates, the Brahma Viharas, all of that. We are fully engaged and we feel the joy that arises from that full engagement. And then fourth, and maybe perhaps most importantly, we know what we're bringing with us and who is showing up. This ox herder, while in the picture that we use on our website doesn't show it quite so clearly, a couple other versions show it more. Sometimes they show the ox herder holding a gourd. But again, Martine Batchelor says that the ox herder, it comes with a bag of goodies. And she says, and you can kind of see with his stick, right underneath his stick, I think there's this bag that he brings with him. She says, our bag is full of joy, compassion, understanding, loving kindness, wisdom, and skillful means. And if only our bag of goodies were only filled with those kinds of things. Because sometimes our bag of goodies is filled with, you know, the unpleasant stuff, joy, but also upset of confidence and worries of the eight worldly winds, you name it. You know, we are a bag of goodies as we come into the marketplace. And we ask ourselves, you know, which of all these things that we're bringing with us when we go to mingle in the marketplace, which things are we going to give the loudest voice to? We bring with us our positive qualities, just like Martine Batchelor lists, but we also sometimes bring our fear and our ego and beliefs about there, you know, there's not enough for us in the world. So we look at let's look at the positive qualities that we're bringing with us. You know, we're entering with extended hands. The hands of generosity, entering with an attitude of, what am I being called to offer here? We listen with our full intention and attention, trying to let go of some preconceived notions and of what should be offered, and waiting and listening and seeing what happens and seeing what the circumstances tell us about what is being asked for. You know, we bring our paramis with us, you know, the generosity and ethics, renunciation, kindness, all of those, patience, all of that. And then we listen really carefully so we know which of these qualities is really being called for. And then there's another thing in our bag of goodies that I hope we always bring with us, which is a sense of quiet. One of the blessings of having practiced so long is that I know that I can bring that inner sense of quiet and solitude with me into the noise. And I hope that you've also experienced that, that that quiet that you experience on the cushion that can come right with you, because that inner quiet, that calm, that awareness that trumps the impulses, all of that can really help you keep calm when the mingling becomes difficult or tense. So it's, what are you bringing and who shows up? How does the self appear when we re-enter? You know, we've spent a lot of time in these months talking about the self, and we spend all this time practicing and studying. And are we coming back into the marketplace thinking, okay, I got it all figured out, no problem, you know? But instead, maybe we bring kind of a thinner sense of self, a more humble one, one that's more open to learning from others. When we come from a place of humility and openness, that small self can be really pretty quiet. We can be open to hearing the stories of others, open to the next stranger. And we know that, you know, this entering the marketplace, it's a journey. But in fact, there's nowhere to go and nothing to do and no one to be. You know, so here a few other comments around what are we bringing and who's showing up. So again, this, the yogi or the oxherder in this picture is this guy who doesn't seem to really care about what he looks like, or, and he kind of brings that sense of freedom of, you know, here I am, just how I am. Now, this picture was drawn hundreds of years ago, but if we were to do a modern day version of this 10th picture, you know, maybe be somebody, well, in Seattle, it might be somebody wearing shorts, because people wear shorts even when it's this cold, or jeans or sweats, and probably not bare-chested, so we wouldn't offend anyone, but really casual, you know, not caring about appearances, neither our own nor that of those that we're going to be meeting. And what kind of speech do we bring with us? You know, we have the criteria for wise speech that's timely, appropriate, kind, and of benefit. But we might also ask, why am I going to say what I'm going to say? Can I listen more and talk less? That's certainly a hard one for me. I keep practicing with it. And if we're sharing, you know, words about our practice, selecting words that are easy to understand and have really easy access. Those of us who've gone on retreat may have learned the hard way that we come back and someone says, oh, how was your retreat? Tell me all about it. Well, they don't want you to tell them all about it. They want to hear maybe a kernel, just a piece of something that you could share that would be of real benefit to them, something that you gained from your own practice. So we learn how to share what we've learned with the Dhamma. When we are inspiring others with our radiance and our compassion, and hopefully some of our wisdom, that whole bag of goodies that Martine Batchelor talks about, how we talk about that is really important. And I want to just say a few more words about what might be standing in our way of fully entering the marketplace. Fully entering means, you know, with ease, with a quiet mind, with wise view, an open heart, a sincere interest in listening to others for clues as to what is really being asked for, from us. And I think fear is one of the things that often enters. Fear of what we might find. You know, this present environment is so charged. People seem to be so mad at each other. I had an experience just in my neighborhood a couple weekends ago where there were these strangers coming and they had cleared all this brush. They were cutting back all this stuff on one of the pathways. And I went over to say thank you. And I ended up having this argument with this guy. And I've been puzzled as to, you know, what did I do that did that? And of course, what did he do? It was a two-way street. But there's so much conflict and so much negative energy out there that it can be kind of fearful and frightening as we think about entering. It can even be hard sometimes coming into a sangha. If you're brand new, you don't know anyone. You don't know how people are going to respond. Are they going to be friendly? Are you going to be welcome? What if you don't know the rules or the protocol of what you're supposed to do when you come into the sangha? Is anyone going to tell you? And then, of course, you know, we bring our egos with us, right? You know, and how personally are we going to take whatever happens in the marketplace? Can we kind of just accept whatever is going to come our way? Can we open ourselves to being okay with whatever is going to arise? I was recently reminded of a quote that I heard quite a number of years ago. I don't know if you all remember this name of Dennis Kucinich. He ran for president quite a number of years ago. He used to be the mayor of Cleveland, Ohio. And he was interviewed by a journalist who said to him, "Hey, you know, people think you're really weird. What do you think of that?" And his response was, "Other people's opinions of me are none of my business." So that might be something that we would take into the marketplace and just, you know, try to be there with an openness. And then we remember that all of our journey, all of the practice is a moment by moment process. Can we really just take that first step into the marketplace? Be with that first encounter, that first person that you meet. You know, don't think about the second or third step or the fourth step or the second or third person you're going to meet. Just none of that's happened yet. And when Sims's new home is built, when, you know, I know that the demolition has happened downstairs and the process is happening. We've been on Zoom for close to 3 years. What will we need when we get back together again in person? I hope that we can bring that same kind of understanding that this is our own little Sangha marketplace. What do we need to bring so that we are fully engaged and open-hearted and willing to be there with acceptance and understanding? So I've said, know what the state of your mind and heart are and follow their lead. Remember the truth of interconnectedness, that each being you encounter, you and it are inter-are. Bring your joy and bliss with you and know what's in your bag of goodies. And be ready to inspire with your radiance and compassion. We take all of the Dhamma with us. We accept what and who you find when you arrive. And you accept where you are as you take that first step. You're rejoining the marketplace just as you are. Just like in the community statement, we welcome all of us just as we are. Like all of our practice, you know, integration, re-entering the marketplace, it's a moment by moment experience. Utejaniya, who you can sign up, you can get these daily little Dharma quotes from him. Several weeks back, his daily thing said that we can take heart in the fact that after all the effort we put in, at some point it becomes easier. The Dhamma sort of comes in, takes you by the hand, and shows you the way. So trust in yourself and your practice that when you arrive, you're going to know just what to do. Thank you for your kind attention. And I hope that some of you have some things that you'd like to share, but your own reflection on entering the marketplace with extended hands or anything of, you know, here we are. We've been spending 10 months together on what has been a more intuitive process. process, I think, than we always often do, but everyone has had their own experience. So I think if you can raise your hand, I think you can unmute. You're free to unmute. Is that right? Yeah. So I can only see a few people, but I'd love to hear how, you know, it's all about integrating our practice. And it's not like keeping the practice for your own, you know, in this little secret. I've got this thing that I do on Sundays and Mondays and Tuesday mornings or whatever. So Judith, I see your hand. Hi.
Okay, well, what struck me this time about the poem was that he said, mingling with the people of the world, not, you know, the people of the village or the people who come shopping today, but the people of the world. That, I mean, that's, it's very inclusive, obviously. It's also kind of intimidating, you know, to think of all those people out there. But yeah, mostly it's just inclusive. It's everybody. So that's what struck me. And I'm one of the introverts that you were talking about who doesn't much like going into the marketplace. So, yeah.
Thank you, Judith. One of the joys of a weird thing about this pandemic is all these Zoom drop-in sits and stuff and these Zoom meetings that even introverts like Judith, who I've never met in person, mm-hmm. but I feel like I know you pretty well because we go to the drop-in sits and I see you at other things. And as an introvert, you've been willing to share. You've shared your haiku poetry and your practice. And so there's, you know, we're doing that here. This is like a little microcosm of the marketplace.
Yeah, I've learned through the years, I've learned how to pretend that I'm not an introvert when something's important, right? And of course, if it weren't for Zoom, I couldn't come at all since I'm in Bellingham, right? Uh-huh. So it's been extremely valuable for me.
Well, good. We're glad that you're here. Thank you for sharing that about that, the mingle with the people of the world. It's a very big one. Yeah. Lauren?
I appreciated your focus on the word mingling because I hadn't really focused on that the first time yesterday when we were talking about it. And it reminded me of the Dalai Lama and stories I've heard about him, in that he certainly brings joy. He certainly brings it to me, and I've heard that he brings it to other people too, just his face. And I've seen videos of him greeting people, you know, who stand along the road while he goes by, and he is just so present. You know, there's just, and the people as they're being met by him and seen by him, just look so, just as joyful as he is, you know, it just seems to be transferred, talking about the interbeing and interconnectedness. And I also remember this piece of one of Sharon Salzberg's books, where she said, and it's in a book that probably many people have read, but she said she was injured and she was in this huge crowd and the Dalai Lama was over there and she was feeling awful, like she was going to be, this is what I remember, she's going to be run into or something because she felt very vulnerable. And she said she saw his eyes focus on her from way across the room and just, you know, transferred this presence again. So I was thinking about an offering that this 10th picture would be doing, would be being able to just mingle with the people of the world, strangers, you know, and just be able to be present with them with nothing, you know, no ego, nothing in between. And I think that's what I was remembering when I was looking at this picture. Thank you.
Such a lovely aspiration. If you haven't already read or listened to the book that Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu did together on joy, it's fabulous. Those two are just, they like crack up with each other. It's really something. Anyone here in the room? Didn't mean to ignore you. It's weird looking at this and I feel like I never looked over here. Hi, please. Is there a, oh, there's a microphone right there. And thank you. What do I have to turn off, or do I turn off anything? Nothing. Okay. Would you say your name first? And
I'm Beth, and I was, when I was looking at mingling in the marketplace, I think literally about the grocery store, that I come from another area of the country where we smile and say hello to each other. And that doesn't happen here very much. And a few years ago, I decided I was going to, and I chose the grocery store because I go there. I tend to go there more often for fewer things because I have an organization and planning problem. So I have to like just get things at will at a time. And I live close to a grocery store. So I chose that, and I decided when I go inside, I'm going to, and I got this from Thich Nhat Hanh. I mean, just the smile thing, you know, I got, that I was just going to smile and walk around and not like invade people's space, but just try to be aware of what's going on, what other people's faces. And almost every single time I meet somebody who I watch them respond to the smile with a startle at first and noticing, and then they usually smile back. And then that makes me want to smile again. Mm-hmm. And very touching. I find it to be very touching.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I recently, so I thanked Beth and thanked her for those small moments that we mingle and reconnect. I recently was on an online retreat with Narayan and Christina Feldman. And Christina Feldman was talking about how she sets these yearly goals. So like 1 year, it was a goal to not hurry. And she found that she could move just as fast as she needed to, but she didn't hurry. And it was such a wonderful thing that she's continued it. And the one that I wanted to mention especially is she decided, you know, when we do our metta practice, and we often start with somebody who's really easy to give metta to, and a teacher and a family member and all that, and you get to a neutral person. Her goal was to not have any more neutral people in her life. And one of the ways I think she could do it is like what Beth did, where they, you know, is like instead of a faceless person, you smile at them. Or like when I go to the grocery store and the clerks always have name tags, I always acknowledge them and say their name, you know, just ask them how their day is, where they are in their shift. You know, it's taking them from neutral to a real human being. And yeah, so thanks for reminding us of those smaller things. Anyone else online who would like to say, share anything? Yes, Don, please, you can unmute.
Yes, I didn't really think too much about mingling in the marketplace. I looked at the monk and saw that he was very happy, and that sort of reflects what I see being here for the first time, because I'm real happy to find a group that I can meditate with. The other groups that I'm in, there is some meditation, but not enough. And so I hope I can stick around.
Well, we hope you can too. Yeah. And when you go on the Sims webpage, there's lots of opportunities, not just the Sunday morning, Thursday night and Monday night, but also the drop-in sits, the Buddhist Essentials classes, the day-longs. So please do join us. We're very happy that you came.
Yes, I'm thinking about the 19th, that there's a day-long retreat on that. So
yeah, on the Brahma Viharas. Yeah, great. Mm-hmm. Anyone else want to share? Anybody feel any, is it difficult to really integrate your practice in your life? You can talk about anything. Yes, Kathy, please.
Suze, thank you so much. I got so many nuggets there. And then you just reminded me, I heard Christina Feldman say once, her yearly resolve was no neutral or no invisible people, or however she put it, no no faceless people. And I thought about going into the marketplace and to truly embody anything like this yogi seems to represent. Pardon me. You'd need to look at everyone, not just the people that are pleasing. And another kind of weird, just quick reaction I had to the yogi the first time I saw this picture was that he looked like somebody who lives outside, looks like a homeless person. Maybe he does live out, and maybe he doesn't need shelter. Maybe he's so, you know, we don't know anything about him or her, but just acknowledging, it's difficult for me to do this. It's difficult for me to, like, I love to chat with the people in the grocery store and people who are helping me, especially like you do, Suze. I look for opportunities anyway. I don't, you know, take a lot of time, but I just look for chances because it makes me happy. It's fun. But, you know, then there are so many other people that it's easy for me to just walk right by. So I find it plenty to think about here. So thank you.
Yeah, and those people in situations that we don't want to engage with, we don't want to mingle, it gives us an opportunity to really reflect on it. What's beneath that? What are the reactions that are coming up? What are the thoughts? What are the emotions? Really, really examine what's going on. Not with a goal of, oh, I got to change my behavior, but really for understanding. And it's from that understanding of what is prompting our behavior, what's prompting our speech, what's prompting the thoughts, that we can then we've got some more choices about making wholesome choices and skillful choices. And I think when what we bring, the goodies we bring into the marketplace, and we're a little disappointed with there, it's not that lovely list that Martine Batchelor said, you know, to hold it all with kindness. And in any moment, we are who we are, and we're bringing what we're bringing. You know, and we don't have to stay there forever or wallow in it. but acknowledge this is where I'm at right now. This is what I can do. So it's really one of the things I started out with this year with a little bit of aversion to thinking, you know, Tim and Tawari, why'd you choose a Zen thing for us to do all year? I've really grown to love it. It's been very challenging, and I've so appreciated how all the Sangha events I've gone to where people have all stepped up and said, yeah, challenging, but yep, yeah, I'm with it. I'm dealing with it. I'm looking at it and exploring it. So a big thank you to everyone in Sims for hanging in there with us. Any other things from, yes, please.
I was just impressed by the, just in that picture, the absolute vulnerability of the individual in the marketplace. He's half undressed. Mm-hmm. He's uncovered. And, you know, personally, can I be in the world without my stuff, my defenses? This is a real challenge, just being out there in the world without anything to, of your, the bits of identity that we use to protect ourselves, that this was, it's going out unprotected. And there's a tremendous confidence in that, that I know I'm struggling with that. I just wanted to.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for
a very challenging image.
Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, good. It's such an important point that you made, that all of what we bring to protect ourselves and to make us safe, feel safe as we engage. And yeah, this guy's just pretty, just letting it all hang out there, huh? Yeah. Thank you. Anyone else want to share? Just a couple comments about Donna. I love how this tradition is based in generosity, and that the teachings have always been freely offered, and the Westerners who studied in the East and came back and brought that same tradition here, all of what Sims offers are freely offered, and we are happy to be doing it. And we also, we're an all-volunteer organization, so we welcome your involvement. There's lots of opportunities, and it's a great way to actually meet each other by volunteering. And in addition, as a nonprofit, we also benefit from your financial donations. And they support our guiding teachers of Tim and Tawari. So we appreciate that as well. And if we can just take a moment and return to our place of kind of quiet and relaxation, just reflecting on what it means to gather together for a couple hours to sit quietly, to do our individual meditation, to listen to the words of the Dhamma, to listen to our Sangha members share their own reflections, to really experience the sincerity of people's commitment to their practice. May the benefit of our collective practice be extended outward to all of those who are here this evening, to everyone in our families and small communities, and even beyond, to, as the words in the commentary, the people of the world. May all beings be at peace. May all beings learn to live with ease and be free from suffering. I think you can unmute if you'd like to say goodbye and I look forward to seeing y'all again.